Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, a listener-supported ministry. In fact, thank you so much for being part of that support for James Dobson Family Institute.
Well, welcome, friends, to Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Do you ever think about how Jesus was a man that walked on the earth? Well, in the scriptures, in Philippians chapter 2, verse 7, we read, "But he, Jesus, emptied himself, taking upon himself the form of a servant, and was made in the likeness of men." Jesus Christ is the true example of who and what we are called by God to be. He was here to serve, a concept we can sometimes forget to show to others through our own grace and kindness. Now, as for men living in today's society, sadly, many guys are confused by what it means to be a man. Masculinity is under attack at its core, and that includes the biological definition of what it means to be a man, or a woman for that matter. In our culture, there is no longer a rite of passage for a young boy to know that he has truly become a man. Many of the markers of what manhood is all about have been lost from generation to generation. In today's classic conversation here on Family Talk, you're going to hear our own Dr. James Dobson talking with John Eldridge about what it means to be a man. John Eldridge is a best-selling author, counselor, and teacher. He is the president of Wild at Heart, a ministry devoted to helping men discover the heart of God. John earned his undergraduate degree in theater at Cal Poly University and actually directed a theater company in Los Angeles for several years before moving to Colorado. John eventually earned his master's degree in counseling from Colorado Christian University and has worked as a counselor in private practice before launching what is now known as Wild at Heart in the year 2000. John and his wife, Stacy, have three grown sons, Samuel, Blaine, and Luke. Let's join our own Dr. James Dobson and author and counselor John Eldridge as they discuss the meaning of manhood right here on Family Talk.
Isaiah, in chapter 61, Jesus says, "I've come to heal the brokenhearted and set the captive free." And it's actually that passage that he quotes when he announces his ministry, you know, after the trial in the wilderness, and he comes into that first moment in the synagogue, and all eyes are on him, and they give him the scroll of Isaiah, and he goes down to what we would call chapter 61, and he says, "Here's why I've come. I really want to heal you, and I want to set you genuinely free, to be my own again." So that's what we do, primarily for men. It all started with men. Giving men back their masculinity, restoring them as men or being used by God to restore them.
What takes place? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, we take men into the deep places of the image of God in them, right? When God created man in his image, he did it male and female, you see. So they have a masculine heart or a masculine soul, right? And that soul has been wounded. And they don't know who they are as men. They are lost.
Can say that as a generalization. Most of the men who come do not know what it means to be a man.
No, they don't. They don't, Jim. And your ministry has been built around trying to salvage what has happened because of that, either in the home or in the community.
That's right.
Right? It has been the loss of men. I mean, we have a lot of men walking around, but not real men. You know, where are they? They are lost and they are wounded. And in some ways, what we've discovered is all a man needs is permission. Permission to admit his real desires as a man, what he really wants as a man, you know, that battle to fight, right? And venture and all of that. And permission to admit his wound, which primarily probably came through his dad. Who did not tell him, "You are a man."
You know? And your assumption is that almost every man is wounded one way or another.
I've never met one who isn't, ever. Anywhere we run into men, I've never met one who isn't. Because, I mean, we live a long way from Eden. You know, this isn't a world that we were designed to grow up in. And little boys, they don't hear from their dads what they need to hear when they're growing up. That's the best case scenario. What actually happens is all kinds of things are said and done to them that wound them deeply as boys, and they never become men. David in the Psalm says, be merciful to me, O Lord. Deal well with me out of your love, for my heart is wounded within me. Now, he was a man's man. I mean, come on, right? Goliath, you know, the Philistines, all those stories, right? Yeah. He was a warrior and a king and a great man in many ways. And yet he knew the reality of a wound in the soul. And he begged God to come and heal him. And then that's what Jesus announces that he came to do. You see, it's not just, I want to shape up your behavior, right? You know, but the Pharisees were great at getting the act together on the outside. But God says, I want to change you from the inside out, make you a new creation, restore you as my man.
You know, you and I wrote books at the same time. Not talking to each other, and yet there's great communality between the two of them. My book, Bringing Up Boys, deals with the fact that boys don't know what it means to be a boy, and they certainly don't know what it means to be a man. And there's great confusion about their masculinity, and that's a major portion of the book. You really kind of picked that theme up, and you did it independently at the adult level and say men don't know what it means to be a man either because of what they experienced when they were boys.
Bingo. Exactly. That our culture no longer knows how to initiate boys to men, right? I mean, there's a lot of boys around. You know, we have no shortage of boys, but we don't know how to take them through that process of making them men, and so that they know down in their hearts they have what it takes. They can stand up, right, for what's right. They can come through, right? We don't know how to do that. And so somewhere between boyhood and manhood, something gets lost.
You know, I have read about some more primitive cultures, if you want to use that phrase, in Africa and other places where a boy turns 12 or 13, and then he is sent out alone into the surrounding countryside to spend the night out there and to fight mythical lions, maybe real lions. And when he comes back, he is transformed. He is a man from that time on. He fights in the wars. He acts and behaves like a man. He puts away childish things. We don't have such an initiation here. And if a person goes through high school and college and maybe even beyond, he is not even emancipated from his own parents. They may be still paying the bills for him. And there is no point at which he can say, I'm a man, and this is what it means to be a man.
Yeah. Yeah. Jim, the Maasai tribe, for example, in Africa says you cannot court a woman until you have killed a lion as a young man. Huh. Now, that means with a primitive weapon, a spear or a club. In other words, you have to know who you are first as a man before you can go to a woman. And most of these guys just take their questions and their confusion to the woman, right? Yeah. And then 20 years later, they wind up in our counseling offices.
You mentioned a minute or two ago that the masculine nature has been denied them, has been robbed. You also said that this wound that occurs frequently comes from the relationship with the father. What is it that fathers do, and what is it that the culture does to emasculate men?
Yeah. Let's start with the grounding. Genesis 1, okay? And God created them in his image, male and female, he created them. I mean, that's just so important for us to put out there, because when God gives the most important gift to mankind, his own image, he does it at the level of gender. It is either as a man or as a woman that we bear the image of God. And so when you start messing with gender, you're messing with the deepest thing about a person. When a culture is confused about gender, you have a culture in its final stages. They're confused about the most essential things. So, look at little boys. What do they want? You know, you give a boy a bike, for example. Is it enough that he learns to ride it? See, he wants adventure. He wants danger. He wants a life of battle, you know, and risk and all of that that we see wrapped up in boys. I can barely tuck my boys in at night without getting ambushed. just the other night, my son filled his blankets with his pillows and his stuffed animals so it looked like he was lying in bed. He was waiting for me on top of the bookshelf to say prayers with him. He leapt from the top of the bookshelf onto me, and then, of course, the wrestling match and the laughter and all of that. They want a battle, right? They play soldier and cowboy and policeman and all of that. You see that in the heart of a boy. And you don't have to make them want this. You have to let them be who they are.
And what you're saying is the culture and sometimes their mothers, sometimes their fathers don't allow them to be wild at heart.
No, isn't it true? I mean, Mom, bless her heart, she's the incarnation of mercy, okay? I mean, boys learn and little girls learn tenderness, mercy, unconditional love from Mom. Okay, but Mom's got to let go, and she has to let those boys go with Dad, you see, into the masculine world. They've got to go with Dad to play basketball, to go hunting, to enter into that sort of initiation process with Dad. And here's why. Because every little boy has one question, and just one. This is so simple. Every little boy is asking, do I have what it takes? That whole thing of look, no hands, right? Yeah, or can I jump off the dock into the lake, right? Or can I, you know, make the team? Any of those things, it's always the same question. Do I have what it takes? And he looks to Dad to answer it. Daddy, am I a real man? Do I have what it takes? And the power of the Father to either bless or cripple is just astounding. The rest of that boy's life will be shaped by how his dad answered or did not answer that question.
How is the question often answered?
In passive fathers with silence. You see, that was my story. My dad was a good man. And we had some early years together that were just precious to me. He taught me to fish, you know, and we'd spend a lot of time out there in a boat catching nothing, you see. But it was the time with my dad, and that it was his delight in me, that he wanted to be with me, you know, and then showing me how to do it, right? And then he became an alcoholic, and he just went silent. Now, he was not a violent man. He wasn't a mean drunk. He was just gone. And so some men just hear silence, like me, and they have an unanswered question, you see. And they typically become the driven men, right? They overcompensate. They become the hyperachievers or even the town bullies, you know. They try and prove that there's something. You see, he wants to look like the man, but he doubts very much he is. And then you have the violent fathers, okay? And their stories, those men know what their wounds are, you see. That young man was in my office not too long ago, and 12, 13 years old, his parents were having an argument, and he stepped in to defend Mom. Now, you see, that's what a man is for, okay? That's what he's meant to do. Rise up, defend, protect. He stepped in between his mom and his dad, and his dad looked at him, and he said, "You mama's boy." Now, he's 28 years old, and he's in my office, and he says, "That's what I am. I'm a mama's boy." He cannot marry a woman, though he very much wants to, finds himself addicted to pornography, on and on the stories go, right? Because of that violent wound, that blow, that rejection, that name that he was given, you are not a man and never will be.
Oh, John, there's so much there. You are saying that this is almost the entire culture.
Oh, yes. That
everybody has been there. Men especially have been there.
Oh, yes.
By their inability to find that masculine place.
Look at all the issues that you so deeply care about. Divorce and the breakdown of the family. Okay. Fatherless children. Pornography, abortion, any of the major social issues, you take any of them and they will find their root in the inability of men to be men, to play the man, to come through, because they've got that question in their soul and that question's never had an answer or it's had a devastating answer.
Do you think schools are emasculating boys?
Is it the nature of a boy, honestly, to sit still for 8 hours? The very structure of it, okay? Yeah. And then you've got to wonder why 3 to 4 times the number of boys as girls are diagnosed as, you know, ADHD or ADD or, you know, some sort of learning disorder. They don't have a disease. They are Huck Finn. Right? They are Tom Sawyer. They want out. Of course they're going to climb the banister. Of course they're going to sock their classmate. They're made for a whole different kind of world, a world that you were describing of initiation and sort of a welcoming in, saying, you know what, that aggressive nature, that's a good thing. Now, not to hit your neighbor, but to defend, to protect, you know, those firemen that went up the stairs.
Now, we admire them. They're heroes.
Aren't they? Where did they get that? That courage, you see, that's deep in the masculine soul, and the schools, in large part, take it away from boys.
That's what you were saying in your book, Wild at Heart, Discovering the Secret of a Man's Soul. You're really authenticating masculinity. You're saying it's all right to be a little bit crazy, to be a hunter and a fisherman or a bungee jumper. Not everybody, however, has to do those things.
My boys love to play chess, but they don't like to get beat, you see. Mm. Even there, you know, in an intellectual game, a man still wants to win, right? He wants a battle to fight. Now, it doesn't have to be a literal battle. Some men are made to go to war, to protect their country and to protect freedom. But other men fight other battles. He might be a doctor, right? And his calling may be to fight for the health of people, you see, to battle disease or injury or harm. You know, he might be a counselor, and his job is to battle the breakdown of a marriage or the loss of a child, you see. But a man needs a battle to fight. It is in his soul. Exodus 15:3, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name, you see? So whether it's hockey, you know, and I'm not a hockey player. I weigh 135 pounds. I never did college football. I don't have trophies of game animals on my walls, you know? But I want a battle to fight, and I know that I'm made in the image of that warrior God. Something happened for my son Blaine this weekend. And it wasn't a successful hunt. It was 4.5 days in the woods with Dad, keeping up with me over some pretty rough terrain, laughing together, you know, having some meals together, being invited into a masculine world. And he was lit up. And when he came home, he just told story after story to Mom and his brothers. It was a passage. It was part of that initiation where a young boy is brought into the company of men, and he is affirmed, and he is validated as a young man. And the other men that were in our company there would say things like, "Wow, Blaine, you were really something out there today."
Well, one of my books was called "Straight Talk to Men and Their Wives," mostly straight talk to men. Was written, first edition of it, in 1980. It's still out there, and if you get a copy today, you will read there that I said the happiest days of my life were the days that I spent hunting with my dad. And again, it didn't matter if we got anything. It was the two of us out there. I was invited into a grown-up masculine world, and I absolutely loved it. And there were things that took place between my dad and me, the way he related to me there, that didn't happen anyplace else.
Yes.
And I still look back on those times as just being absolutely precious. When I was 5 years old, my dad and I used to have kick fights. I was in kindergarten, and he would invite me to kick his shins. And I would go after him, and then he would inevitably block my kick by putting his shoe up, and I would run my shin into the bottom of his shoe, and I mean, I bruised myself up. My mother was horrified. She was saying, right, stop, you must quit. And I was laughing, and he was laughing. I loved it. But that was an element of the same thing you're talking about.
It is. You see, a boy needs to test his strength on his daddies. And that's why they love to wrestle. My sons will sneak up in the kitchen when I'm making breakfast and pow, they'll just pop me one right in the shoulder. Your dad wasn't being unkind to you, you know? They want to test their strength, you see, because they figure if we can take on the old bull, well, then maybe we've got, you know, antlers of our own. You know, maybe we're something to reckon with. See, a man needs to know he's powerful. He needs to know that. He needs to know he's got what it takes when the going gets tough. And you'll watch little boys test that through their whole youth and up into their adolescence. And that whole thing with, you know, adolescent boys and fast cars and, you know, the shoot 'em up movies and that kind of thing. You look at that, that is not psychological disturbance brought on by violent television. They are looking for their masculinity. They're looking to know they're powerful.
It has to be controlled, though, doesn't it? It has to be within certain limits.
Shaped by the father.
Exactly.
What we're trying to describe is the question boys are asking. Daddy, do I have it? Do I have what it takes? And the role of the father to answer that question for his son, not just once, but 1,000 times over his youth. And if all you'll do now is just look for it when he's playing in the yard, when he's building a model airplane, the question will come up. I can't do this. I don't have what it takes. And it's the father's role to step in and say, son, you do. You do. In fact, this is absolutely amazing. Right before Jesus starts his official ministry, okay? He's obviously been in the carpenter shop for years, but he's now going public, okay? And it's those last 3 years. He is baptized by John in the Jordan. He comes up out of the water, and what happens?
Well, the dove descends and said, "This is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased." And then he is led into the wilderness.
You see, if the father speaks and he validates him, right? I mean, he basically says, "Jesus, you are the apple of my eye. You have what it takes." Now, this is amazing. If Jesus needed to hear that, the Son of God needed those words from his father before he launched into his greatest test of his life, how much more do we need to hear those as men?
And those events were back-to-back in his life.
Weren't they?
The high point of his life, undoubtedly, was hearing those words from God.
Absolutely.
"This is my beloved son." And straightway, he was led into the low point of his life.
And look where the devil attacks him. "If you are the Son of God, if you are." 3 times he comes at him, attacking him at his identity. You see, he tries to go after the very blessing.
It's really good to have you back, and thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for the insights that you're sharing with regard to masculinity. It's really been interesting to me to read what you've had to say in Wild at Heart, because it is the extension again of what I was writing about in Bringing Up Boys and what happens when those needs are not met properly at that point. And they don't go away. They're still there at 30, 40, 50 years of age, aren't they?
And the good news is, Jim, is that those questions can be answered. The story is not over. A man doesn't have to live there. He can find from God what he didn't have from his father.
Okay, John, thank you for being with us.
Great to be here.
Men do need to reclaim their identity in Christ and as men. You've been listening to John Eldridge sharing with our own Dr. James Dobson here on Family Talk about what makes a man and how to live an abundant life. Now, if you miss any part of today's discussion, you can listen again on our website at drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. That's drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. And remember, you can now listen to our daily broadcasts in a quick and easy way through Amazon Alexa. The next time you have your friends all around the house and you can't get to the phone or radio, remember you can still listen to our latest program through Alexa. Learn how to get started when you go to drjamesdobson.org/Alexa. That's drjamesdobson.org/Alexa. Even though Roe v. Wade was overturned just over a year ago, did you know that the fight to protect the preborn is far from over? To support expecting parents, young families, and new mothers in need, you can stand with us today. Too few people realize that the local Pregnancy Resource Center is literally on the front lines of that mission field, sharing the gospel and ministering to pregnant women, young moms, and their children. To encourage these inspiring ministries, the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute urges every church and Christian to adopt a PRC, a Pregnancy Resource Center. Now, to find a PRC in your area, you can go to a special web address that we have created for you at drjamesdobson.org/PRC. It's that simple. You can see all the Pregnancy Resource Centers in your own community when you go to that link, and maybe there's one that God has placed on your heart for prayer and support. Remember to keep these expecting moms and their babies in your prayers each and every day as well. Go to drjamesdobson.org/PRC. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'm Roger Marsh, encouraging you to join us again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Till then, may God continue to richly bless you and your family.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.